Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to the third episode of Entrepreneur Radio, powered by Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Alex Gossett Shiflett, and along my side is our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. How are you today, Ryan?
Outstanding. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited about this show.
Me too.
We have three incredible guests in the studio today. First, we have Diane Buffington. Diane is owner of the Wild Hope Art Gallery, and she is an artist in her own right. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our next guest is also an artist, as well as an art instructor for Wild Hope Gallery. Welcome, Laura Lanford.
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
And last but certainly not least is our guest, Bob Cargill, who is also an artist.
Thank you.
Well, welcome. Okay. The way we're going to do this today is I'm going to interview each of you separately, and then I'm going to open up the table for some crosstalk, for some open discussion, where I'll throw out a few topics for everyone to kind of talk about. Also, if during the show, if someone says something that you want to talk about later, just jot it down, jot a note down, and we can save it for the last part of the show. All right. Diane.
Yes.
I think I've asked you this question before, but I want to ask it again. When did you first fall in love with painting?
I have been a painter since I was a child. My favorite story that I tell is that we had a bathroom in our little bungalow house in Minnesota, and over the tub was this white wall, and I wrote and drew on that wall from the time I was 2 years old, and my mother would come in one door, my sister would block the other door. And I probably shouldn't say this on the radio, but I told my sister, get out of the way. Mama's going to give me hell.
You can say that on this radio. We're not FCC regulated.
She didn't tell it the same way.
Is that right?
No, that was it.
Well, Diane, tell our audience what type of painting you do and what medium you work with.
I work in oil, and I've started out with some representational art, but as I have grown in doing some oil painting, and one of the things that Laura Lanford has helped me with is being a little looser with my painting and being more impressionistic. And I think that that is one of the reasons why I have been so fond of Laura and so enamored with her work. And I think that her being in the gallery now is going to be very good for me, as well as the students that we might have there.
What are some challenges that you have with working with oil?
Well, oil is very forgiving. You can wipe it off if you don't like it, and it stays wet. So I think that it's my favorite medium for that reason. Now, Bob Cargill, he works in watercolor, which is not forgiving at all. And, wow. You know, what you see is what you get.
What you get.
That's unfortunate.
We'll be interested to hear about that in a minute. How does your art reflect who you are, Diane?
You know, I come from a background of advertising. I owned an ad agency, and I was a creative director in Atlanta at Buffington Rizzo for 25 years. And I think that my art is sort of an outgrowth of my advertising. And usually my art tells a story or asks questions, or the whole objective when I paint something is to make the viewer wonder or think about something or to question. And I think that that is the essence of most of my work.
Okay, well, tell our audience a little bit about your journey to where you started going into advertising and then ending up at the Wild Hope Gallery.
I have had been in advertising. Well, I was a painting major when I was in college at the University of Alabama, and I knew that I needed to make a living. So I went into advertising when I graduated, and I was a freelancer for a while. And then I started getting my own clients. So I started my own agency, and it grew as time went by. And when I retired about 8 years ago now, I started painting again. And so from that point, I started getting so many paintings, and after I hung them all over the house, they were starting to stack up in the garage, and so I figured it was time to get a gallery. So I opened an art gallery.
And tell us how you came up with the name
The Wild Hope.
That's a good story.
Well, I was trying to figure out how I was going to afford this art gallery. And so what I did is I went to a gentleman who had a beautiful location. He had it up for rent for years, and it had sat empty. And so I went to him with a program of, okay, I'm going to open a charitable organization, and I'm going to bring all these artists in, and he could underwrite it by providing us with the space. And in return, I would handle events for him, because I had heard that he wanted to have events in that large location. He hemmed and hawed around it for a while, but when I presented it to him, I said to him, you know, this may be a wild hope, but here's my presentation. And sure enough, he did not go for it. And so I found a smaller place nearby, but when I thought about the fact of it being a wild hope, I thought, well, that's a perfect name for the art gallery. So that's how it came about.
That's cool.
And tell us what makes the Wild Hope Art Gallery special. I know, just because I've read some things about you, that your guest or your clients, what do you call them? Clients, guests, or...
Clients, usually. I think the most important part of the gallery is when I do art consulting. That is the most successful part of my gallery. And one of the things that I have realized in having the gallery now for 2 years, that I really want to focus on the art consulting, because I think providing access to art is one thing. But if you're sitting there waiting for people to come in and to buy art, I mean, it's a long wait. So what I have found is that a few clients have come in and they have said, you know, can you help me? I've got these empty walls and I don't exactly know what I want, but I know what I love when I see it. So I would go to their house, I'd take pictures, I would then use my resources that are online and everywhere, galleries that I know and even the artists that I know. And I will send them emails with samples, and usually after about a few of those, I can zero in on what speaks to them, and I've had great success with that.
And that's kind of special treatment, isn't it? I mean, going to their homes and...
Well, you know what it's like? It's like being in the ad business.
Okay.
It's like having a client, and it's, you know, going there and listening, being able to empathize with whatever it is they're feeling and what they want to promote on their walls.
And finding out what they want.
Yeah, and what speaks to them, right. What makes them happy, what inspires them. So that's really where I'm going to take the gallery from now on. And that's one of the reasons why Laura and I are going to get together and work on a project where we actually do some classes. But I'll let her tell you all about that. But I think the other special thing that's going on at Wild Hope is the fact that we're having the Mad Men show. And it is actually this Saturday night.
June 18th.
Yes. And it's at MoDA, which is the Museum of Design in downtown Atlanta, right across the street from the High Museum. And we have 44 artists who used to be in advertising. These are creative directors, CEOs of ad agencies, people that have always been very creative. And I think that for me, one of the things that is most exciting about having this and doing this event is that I have met so many wonderful people. And when you get more than two together in a room, the room lights up. The stories are amazing. There is so much energy among these folks. They are just full of excitement and the love of creativity.
I'm sorry. Why do you think so many, they just jumped at the chance to be a part of this? And also, can you explain the coincidence that they all used to be in advertising?
Well, actually, that really came about from Bob. I think Bob is the inspiration for this show. I had given him a show in my gallery for his watercolors, and all of his cronies were there.
How did she know they were cronies?
So we discussed, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had a show for all of the ex-ad guys and women? There's lots of women in the show. And so it, one thing led to another, and gradually, you know, it came to pass. It took maybe almost a year and a half for it to happen.
Yeah.
But we got a list of all of the ad people that, you know, three or four people sat down and gave me lists of names and whatnot. And I sent out an inquiry to see if they were interested. And we got, out of 100 names, 50 of them were doing artwork. The other 50 wanted to come. So so we should have a pretty big group at this. And also, this event is going to be sponsored by Buckhead Investment Partners. And they're handling all the catering and all the, you know, the nice things that go along with a show like this.
Nice. So,
Saturday night.
Saturday night. It should be big.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come back to you. Okay. But right now I want to turn to Laura Lanford. And Laura, you are a representational impressionist artist and your medium is oil paint.
Yes.
So describe to our audience exactly what is a representational impressionist.
Well, representational means when you look at a painting, you know what it is. It's not an abstract piece of work is left. There's a lot of interpretation left in an abstract piece of work. But representational means if I put a coffee cup on a table and paint it, you know that it's a coffee cup. An impressionist artist really tries to take a subject matter and make it their own rather than copy something photorealistically. So the early impressionists, of course, were Monet and Manet, and those were the earliest impressionists, and that's what I kind of like to call myself, as a representational impressionist.
And Laura, tell us, when did you first fall in love with art?
I've been in love with art as long as I can remember, like Diane. I think my earliest recollection was coloring when I was 2 years old. I just love to draw. I love to color. The crayon box was my favorite toy. That journey started when I was very young. And I went to high school, and I had a fabulous art high school teacher who encouraged me to pursue art as a career.
And where, tell us about where you studied.
Well, my parents were extremely supportive of me, and we tried to find an art school, but I wanted to go to a big state school, so that ended up being Auburn University, and I decided to study graphic design and illustration for 2 years at Auburn. I loved it, but like Diane, I needed to make a living, so I pursued a different career path as a speech therapist. But those early fundamentals, those 2 years at Auburn, really were invaluable to me as a painter today. And after 15 years as a therapist, I decided to take a professional level workshop with a woman named Joanne Williams Walker in Florida. And I was scared to death. I was terrified. And I knew...
Why were you scared?
Well, it was a professional painting class, and I had never done that. And I thought, well, I'm going to come out crying or I'm going to be laughing. So it ended up being fabulous. And she set me on fire to paint. And I knew when I walked out of that class that this is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to study painting. And so I started workshop hopping. Workshop hopping. I started taking from artists around the country. I took from Guido Frick and Nancy Frank, Bill Davidson, lots of people. And that was about a two-year journey until I landed in a workshop with James Richards. And Jim started a mentoring program in Atlanta. And I always say I won the lottery. I got a ticket because I got a place to be able to mentor with him. He is just a master painter, and it's been a privilege to paint with him. He's an incredible artist, and he's taught me basically everything I know. And about 3 years into that mentoring program, Jim asked me to teach at his studio. And I was just floored. I couldn't believe it. I never dreamed I would be teaching painting. But Jim saw the teacher within me before I even did, and that is how I became an art instructor.
And how let me phrase this right. What do you enjoy most about being an art instructor?
Gosh.
I think you're the boss.
Is that it?
The reason that's a difficult question is there's just so much I love. I love painting. It's such a joy. I think the thing I enjoy the most are the students and the people that come to me and need to go to the next level. And it's so cool to see the light bulb go off, you know, to take that beginner student who's never touched oil before and just, like I was with Joanne, just be on fire for it.
Yeah, and later in the program, I'm going to ask you some more questions about teaching and also about where you started with, you wanted to be an artist, but then you had to make a living.
Right.
And that's a topic we're going to talk about when we get to the when we get to our roundtable discussion. Why did you choose to work with oil?
Well, my very first, you know, lucky you, Diane, getting a painting major. I didn't take one painting class until I was probably 30. I took a class. I audited a class. I was living in Rome, Georgia at the time, and I took a class at Shorter College. It was beginning painting, and I started in acrylics. And I didn't know anything about painting. And towards the end of that class, my professor, Brian Taylor, said, "Hey, have you ever tried oils?" And I said, "No." So he put the oils out. And the minute I touched an oil paint, it's like painting with butter or frosting. And I just fell in love with the medium. And it's so forgiving. And Bob can do watercolor. My hat's off to you because that's such a rigid, you know, unforgiving medium. But oil is so forgiving. I can mess up. I can do it again. Mm-hmm. I can scrape it off. There's all kinds of opportunity with oil that you don't get in other mediums.
I couldn't afford anything else.
Well, it's a good thing you were good at that.
Yes.
Laura, how does your art reflect who you are?
That's a great question. Well, sometimes it doesn't. You know, the big.
Okay, that's fair.
We try, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, Jim has taught me about, people ask, what do you like to paint? And the big picture is, I like to paint light and shadow. And how does that reflect who I am? I love seeing light in the world and just how that dynamic, how the light and shadow dialogue goes with any subject, whether it's a landscape, a still life, a figure. That's really what I want to try to convey is the beauty in the light.
In the light.
Okay. And the dialogue between the shadow.
Right. Because Diane, you mentioned that your paintings tell a story. And your focus is the light, making that painting as beautiful. Help me out here.
As beautiful as I can make it, but really it's a connection with the viewer, trying to evoke some type of emotion or some type of connection with the person that's looking at your work.
Okay.
Which is very similar to the story idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's how, you know, what good is a painting if it doesn't evoke some emotion from the viewer?
Right. And painting is a visual language. You know, we're trying to speak a visual language. We're not just copying photographs. We're not copyists. We're interpreters trying to connect with the world in a different way.
And do you have a specific process or, like, do you have an idea and it just kind of goes from there when you start working on a new piece?
Well, as beginner painters, we all want a process. We all want a specific way. You know, we want a 2+2. And, gosh, if anybody's taught me there isn't a 2+2, it's James Richards. Because if, you know, if you say, do you always do this? You know, the answer is, you know, there's never an always.
Right.
But when students come to me, I try to teach them at least, you know, some type of jumping off point for a process. So at this point in my journey, you know, I have an idea of a process, but I don't always stick to that particular process. I try to change it up a lot because if you don't, you're not going to grow.
Right. Well, tell us about your relationship with Wild Hope Gallery.
My relationship with Wild Hope. I have been represented with Diane about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
About a year and a half with Diane. And she, it first of all, it's just a beautiful gallery. It's a gorgeous place. She's done a fabulous job with creating a really a little good place for good art in Roswell, Georgia. And so I've been represented there for about a year and a half. And when Diane and I started talking about this new idea of being an artist in residence and painting at the gallery, I just jumped on the opportunity.
And tell us about some of the classes that you offer.
Well, we don't have anything on the schedule, but
yet.
But it's coming.
Okay.
I typically do 1 and 2 day workshops. And those workshops range from anything to like an anything goes workshops or fundamentals of oil painting or painting from photographs or street scenes or brushwork or composition boot camp. I've done a very successful class this year called Color Mixing Boot Camp, which was followed up by Color Mixing 2 Boot Camp. So the possibilities when we're talking about the fundamentals of art is just endless, really.
And how can our listeners find out about your workshops?
For the Wild Hope, they need to contact Diane.
And I will be posting them on the Wild Hope website as soon as we get a schedule up.
Right.
Okay.
And the other class I would like to mention, what I'd really hope to do, and I am going to do, is an open studio figure. Figure time. It's not going to be a workshop. There's not going to be instruction, but I'd like to hire a model and have a limited amount of students who can come and pay a daily fee and paint the figure live.
Okay.
And that's a source that isn't readily available to be able to go and paint figures and, you know, just show up for the day and there's the figure and there's the setting and they can paint to their heart's content.
Why is that hard to arrange? Is it finding the model? Or?
I think you have to have a place, you know, mm-hmm. and there are just not that many people that are willing to, you know, set it up and do it.
Okay.
I'd like to intrude a thought. That when I saw Laura's work, I decided to quit painting.
Oh, no. Is that right?
You know, that is the case with anybody that comes in the gallery. They see her work.
Thank you. Too kind.
The thing that I love about her work is that it looks so effortless.
It's an illusion.
That's hard to do. Well, Bob, I am going to bring you into the conversation now.
Okay.
When did you first fall in love with art?
Well, I'm not sure that it was that I fell in love with art, but I fell in love with ideas. That led me to advertising right from the beginning. In fact, I wrote this on my pad here that I remember radio, that I thought you guys would like me because I remember radio.
Oh, excellent.
When I was a little kid, I would have chores to do on a Saturday morning, and there was a program called Let's Pretend. I can still hear the music from Let's Pretend. And that inspired me to always have ideas. So my pretending became creative imaginations, which translated into advertising. When I related it to advertising, every time I saw an ad, I would get excited about it. And one of the examples that I remember was a commercial, picture this, if you will, black and white TV, and snow is coming down. And you hear footsteps in the snow, crunch, 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 crunch. And then you saw a garage door open, but not the garage door today where the garage door goes up, the doors open left and right. And it goes across the snow. And then all of a sudden, the announcer says, "Did you ever wonder how the man who drives the snowplow gets to the snowplow?" And then the logo goes on the screen, says Volkswagen. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I could do ads like that, I want to be in advertising the rest of my life.
And you were hooked right there.
And I was, and I still am.
What a great story.
There's one other little one I'll tell you. I hope it's relative to something here for us. But there was a commercial where you saw a wine bottle come out of a carton and just rise up. and turn around so you saw the label. And the announcer says, and the wine bottle says, "Wow, so this is Texas." And the announcer says, "Careful." And he names the wine. And he said, "You're a California wine." And I thought, what a brilliant way to introduce a wine to Texas. It just kept happening, all those kinds of things that I got a kick out of that. And so for the rest of my life, I was hooked in advertising.
And where did you tell us where you worked in advertising?
Well, in the very beginning, I worked in a small studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And by accident, I helped a young man get an interview in an outstanding ad agency called Air Worldwide in Philadelphia. And I went with him during the interview. And the gentleman that interviewed him told him that they didn't do anything but concepts in this ad agency. And his portfolio had only illustrations in it, finished art, if you will. He said, "We just work on ideas." And he said, "We're working with Herbert Leupin in France right now, and that's all we do." And he turned to me and he said, "Well, what do you do?" Not that I had an interview there. And I had a few things to show him, just brought them with me in case. And he looked at what I had and he said, "We'd like to hire you." And it was the most exciting thing that ever happened in my life. Worked on some outstanding ad agency things. And that was the beginning of my life. And the natural translation from all those concepts is to paint. Come up with a drawing. For me, it was little cartoons. And then that translated to paintings. I could keep going on and on and on.
I'm mesmerized. You're a great storyteller. Oh, she's holding fabulous. Up one of your cartoons. Yeah. Tell us about that one.
Well, when... like I said, Bob was inspirational on the Mad Men show. And we wanted to make a pitch to a very important advertising owner and CEO in Atlanta to sort of underwrite this exhibit. And so Bob knew I had a meeting with him. So he drew me this little cartoon with encouragement. It says... "You did it back then, award-winning stuff every darn day, so you can do it again. I don't know anyone more than you guys, more than you creative geniuses who can help keep hitting home runs day after day. Sell it, promote it, you can do it."
And it's a cute little picture.
Yeah.
Is that you, Bob, in the picture? That kind of looks like you.
Looks like
it. Yeah.
That's fabulous.
So, Fat Ed Bob.
So,
I had one other thing I thought.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead.
Everything that I do, whether it's a painting or a cartoon or a message that you read, is I find it very inspirational. And I just got a book entitled The Bee and the Acorn. And it's written by Paula Wallace, who's the president of SCAD. And she's a great promoter. And this book, when I opened it and read it, I read this first paragraph. And I want to read it to you.
Please.
The work, this is as inspirational as a piece of art, okay? "The work of writing, like all artistic creation, is part technique, part inspiration, and all magic. Something happens when words brush up against one another, cascading down the page through the rifling of sentences and paragraphs. The words do something. They turn into a story." And I wrote, "And the story into a visual art."
It's beautiful.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? This woman is a genius who runs a school that is outstanding with a slogan called...
Creative Careers.
Creative Careers. Well, no, it's a little different than that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
Well, okay, and the name of the book, if you're interested, is called The Bee and the Acorn by Paula Susan Wallace.
Yeah.
Okay. our readers might want to check that out. So you went, you started with advertising, and then you went into, you continued with cartoons, and then you started in painting. And why did you choose watercolor? I mean, you mentioned that it was the only thing you could afford, but is that really the reason?
Yeah, it was cheap, and I was allergic to oil.
Oh, is that right?
That's
okay,
really,
well,
yeah, that was really? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah.
And what do you think about what Laura and Diane have said about how hard it is to work with watercolor?
Well, I think they're right. It's not forgiving. When what you put down, you can't do over and over like you do with oil. But I like the spontaneity. I like the quickness of it. It's analogous to a cartoon. You know, you put it down and it's just spontaneous. That's what I liked about it. And so I got to the point where people know me for doing watercolors, and I can't stop now.
It's an addiction.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about your relationship with the Wild Hope Gallery.
It's hard to believe. It was so great. I remember when Diane decided that she was going to have this gallery, and she told me about it. I had never met her before, but when I finally met her and heard all her enthusiastic responses to everything that she was going to do, I said, my God, this girl can't fail. She was going to do a great gallery, and she did. And everything looked really great. She offered me the opportunity of having a show in her gallery. And it was not successful in terms of selling a million paintings, but it was successful in getting them.
It was the largest group we ever had.
Wow.
for a show. It was really great fun.
I think everything that you do, if you're an artist, is exciting.
True.
I don't care what it is, whether it's reading something. I'm on advisory council for SCAD. The people that you work with are unbelievable. Paul Wallace and the faculty and the staff and everyone you run into, they're enthusiastic about what they're doing. So whether it's watercolor or oil or sketches or cartoons or just good copy, good stories, there's some magic inside that turns into positive enthusiasm. And I think that I've had the good fortune to either work with people like Diane and now Laura, and anyone else, that you just can't think, how did I get so lucky to be here with them? And now I'm listening to you people, your enthusiasm. And it's, I remember radio, remember?
Right. Well, I want to open up the floor now for discussion. And one thing that I want us to talk about at first, the business side of being an artist. On my last show, we had some actors and we had a rapper, and they talked about the struggle of wanting to pursue their passion, but also having to make a living. Thoughts?
Oh, it's me? I can say something to that. I think that it's like anything else. You have to work at it. Work hard. I have this little note here that I got from a friend. He said, when I worked for Richard, he said that if you want to be the best and you're willing to work hard to be the best, then someday someone will come along looking for the best and there won't be many to choose from. That's when your ship comes in. And I think that gives me goosebumps to even think about how you get involved in any project, whether it's art or copywriting or whatever it is. But I think that's a truism. If you want willing to work hard to make whatever you love and want to happen, that's it.
I also think that there's a lot of emphasis right now on education and being scientific and math and those kinds of things. But you can have all the scientists and all the mathematicians and all those people, but if they don't have that creative side of them, they don't necessarily run companies or make things happen or, you know, that creativity of thinking. whether it's in an art situation or just plain coming up with new ideas. I think that's critical. And I think that's one of the things that Bob always talks about SCAD is so good at helping students become creative thinkers.
And how much they're all needed out there.
Right.
I have another little tidbit, if you will. There was a guy by the name of Bill Birnbeck who was a famous advertising man out of New York, and he always came up with these little gems. Then one of the gems, he said, an idea can turn to dust or magic depending on the talent that rubs against it. Now think about that. Isn't that what really happens? No matter what it is. If you want to do it, whether it's advertising, writing, or painting, whatever, I'm sorry.
Just do it.
Anyway.
And what advice would you give to a young entrepreneur out there that is trying to make a living but also pursuing their art?
I think you've got to continue to pursue your art, but you've also got to figure out a way to supplement it with something that you know that you can make some money at. And I know several young artists that ended up going to New York, trying to make it in the big art scene in New York. And this one particular girl that I remember, she ended up as a hat check girl, and she was a fabulously talented person. And, had she maybe had, I think, taking graphic design, there's so many fields now, you know, with the computer, there's art in the computer today. I know a lot of artists that actually do their art on computer and then produce it on canvas and all sorts of different ways. So I think you just have to do what you love. If you do what you love, you'll be successful at it.
And let's talk about that for a minute. What is a measure of success as an artist? Is it getting that fortune and fame? Is it being able to make a living at doing what you passion is, what you love doing? Or could it be being a hat check girl, but at the same time you're still producing your art because that's your passion?
I think that you make those choices, and for me, I want it a lot. I always wanted to make a good living. And so it was important for me to go into advertising to make it work. But, there's always time to be an artist too.
I think my best advice on all of it would be don't quit. Yeah. And what happened with me, the illustration program at Auburn was grueling. It was so hard. And, as you look around at other students, and they're having a great time, and I'm working all the time. And I thought, gosh, is it going to be worth it to not make much money? And so for me, I was like Diane, I wanted to eat and have decent things. And also, no one was talking to me back then. I never dreamed you could make a living as a painter. I mean, I thought I had to do graphic design, because that's where, if you were going to make a living, that was where it was going to be in advertising. It certainly was not going to be as a painter. And I think the plein air movement in America right now has a lot to do with the success of painters right now, because there's lots and lots of excellent painters that are making good livings painting. So when I got my master's in speech therapy, it did give me a venue and a path to be able to make a living. And so I kind of piddled on the side in art. And I almost wish I had been able to incorporate doing both, just like your hat girl.
Mm-hmm.
Doing both to be able to, keep the creativity flowing. But I will say all things work together for good, because I think me being a speech therapist and being able to take a patient or student where they are and take them to the next level and be able to break down processes has helped me tremendously with teaching.
It's a good point.
You were going to say something.
I think one of the things that I like about SCAD's line, the University for Creative Careers. That gives you an opportunity to think it isn't just one or two things that I need to pursue. Creative careers, how you think about your own life and the assignment that you've got, whether it's in advertising or writing books, or I think there's a liberal attitude there that is inviting to young people. So that I heard one the other day that this lady went to Boston to work in an ad career, and the career is paying well, but not paying enough. When you're ambitious, you want more money, and so she started as a waitress in Atlanta, and she pursued that as a side thing, and she's I almost hate to tell you, she's making a fortune on weekends.
Waitress.
As a waitress. But it sustains her. It right. allows her to pursue the one thing she really wanted. In the meanwhile, it's all temporary.
Right.
You know? So anyway.
There's one thing that I think is important in this conversation, and that is that I wonder if the general public appreciates and realizes the value of original art today. I think that I see it in my gallery. People, you know, I can always tell an art lover when they come in. I mean, they stand, they look at the painting, they absorb it, they understand what the artist is trying to tell them. And so many people just come in and, like, you know, they do a circular route and out the door. And I feel like they're very uncomfortable in there. And I think it's because maybe we don't do enough with our children to teach art, to, you know, if you're a family and you've got one nice piece of original art that maybe, you know, was a little expensive, maybe not, but and it has a place of honor in your home, I think that speaks volumes to yes. children about what art is and to be able to appreciate art. My children, like my one particular son more than the other, you know, he loves art, and he always, you know, he wouldn't think of buying something that was, you know, knocked off by a furniture store or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just think that having an appreciation of art is an important responsibility that parents need to give their children.
And that brings me to the last question that I wanted to bring up. Talking about, you mentioned the piece of art that was knocked off, you know, just, you know, to go in someone's home, not really meaning anything. I have a very good friend. Her name is Dani Marie Wagner, and she has an MFA from MCAD. That's the Minnesota College of Art and Design. And she is very in tune to what she wants to create and her work. However, years after finishing the program, she has felt that need for money. Not that, you know, she wants this lavish lifestyle, but just to support herself. And so she's moved into noticing that certain paintings sell at their art shows, like big pieces for hotels and corporate. Talk about that fine line of creating that art that's really inside of you and then creating that piece of art that you're creating so for you can pay rent.
Yeah.
To sell volumes of it.
Right.
Well, and I think, you know, that's a lot of what you see, and there's a place for it. And I think that, you know, in everybody's home, there's always, you know, a few of those pieces. I think I have some of my own. I think that I know an artist. She's a folk artist. She's pretty popular. She's taken a lot of her pieces that are bestsellers, and she's made prints of them. Actually, a company that she works with that actually takes her prints and makes them mass produces them. And they probably sell them in, you know, all kinds of places like Kmart and Target and Hobby Lobby and all over the place. And, you know, she gets a little percentage off of each one. Not a lot, but it's, you know, it's something that an artist can do And if you have something that sells like that and it's worthwhile, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, it's she created an original piece of art to begin with. So it has some value to it, even if it's a print. I mean, prints are always popular, have been for years.
Yeah, I think it's a question of marketing. You know, she can sell her art and feel precious about it, and it's got to be $1,000 or I'm not selling it. Or she can get lots of prints and sell 100 of them for $25.
Same deal. Yeah.
Well,
same amount of money.
Yeah. But it's a way of marketing. You know, how do you do it? What do you do? It's a tough question.
How do you do it? That's something we explore here on this show.
Well, that's a great thing to explore.
You have to have a bit of an investment to do it. I mean, it's not going to be extremely expensive. Let's say for example that we took one of Laura's paintings. And we decided to make a gicle out of it. And, you know,
that's a print.
I was going to say, what's a gicle?
A gicle is a high-quality inkjet copy of her original piece of art. And let's say we put it on canvas, and that makes it look like almost like the real thing. And I've certainly done that with some of my paintings. My son has about 3 of them in his home. And I think, you know, that is very close to the original. And I think it has a lot of value. And I think you can probably, let's say, for example, it would cost you $75 at least for the digital copy. And then depending on how many you printed up, maybe if you printed 100 of them, you could print them on paper, you could print them on canvas. You might spend $500 in addition to that to have 100 pieces, and then you sell them, you figure out how much can I make on each of these, so you could make some money on it.
Yeah, I think you have to cooperate a little bit with the gallery and have a promotional thing.
Well, and you could go to art festivals. You could put those prints up, advertise them that they are prints, and they're only $25 a piece. And people walk by, and I guarantee you, I used to do art festivals, and $25 is the right number.
Yeah, that's what sells.
It gives people a way to buy art.
I think what Laura said earlier was, don't quit.
Yes.
Yeah. Just keep going. Believe that it's going to happen someday. Unless someone, even if this someone did tell you, your stuff will never sell. You say baloney.
Yeah.
Somebody will want it.
I also think that the affirmation as an artist can't come from selling of work. If you're talking about success for me, and it took me, you know, when I first started with Jim, mentoring with him, I had an idea about being a gallery selling artist. And as I went through the process with him, you know, my mind began to transform into what is really my goal as an artist. And it is to become a better artist. Every time I paint. And it's great if I can sell a piece of work. But I think each individual has to decide what their true mission is as an artist. Are you in this as a business and to market and to sell? And that's your main goal, because then you're a production artist all the time. Or are you in this to really master a craft and spend the 10,000 hours and miles of canvas and tons of money to become a better artist? You know, it really ends up being up to the individual what they want out of it. But at the end of the day, I say don't quit, no matter what it is.
That's right.
Yeah, I think there's another element missing, and that is that at some point, we all feel a little unsure of the product that we produce.
Well, of course, we're our worst critics every time.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter how good it is. It's never good enough.
And if it's not selling, it's demoralizing. So somewhere along the line, while they're telling you what to do and produce a product that is saleable, they tell you it may not happen right away, or it may not always happen when you want it. So there needs to be the psyche thing, someone there encouraging you to continue with a positive thought that what you're doing is right.
Right. And it goes to say, you know, to follow up with that statement you just made, it's demoralizing also, not only when you create a good piece of art that's not selling, but you turn to the right or left and you see a lot of art that is really...
Say it.
Marginal.
Go ahead, say it. You can say it.
Very marginal from an artistic point of view that sells like hotcakes. And you're like, what? Either there's a, you know, there's a lot of bad art with some bad art lovers.
Is that what it's
called? Can I say that?
You sure can. I think you just did.
Well, in a tactful sort of way. So, you know, everybody has different tastes. And, you know, the taste in different markets, you know, in Charleston, there's a representational market. In Atlanta, there's a very abstract market. So, you know, art is...
We're having the same problem the used car salesman's having. Think about that.
You know, it's all a matter of taste and subjectivity, right?
Right. And I think that, again, one of the most important things that you all have said, and it's been said on the show before, is don't give up. You know, just keep going.
Never quit.
Never quit. Well, Diane, Laura, and Bob, this has been an absolute pleasure having you on
great.
The show today.
Thank you so much.
And examples of your work will be included on the posting of this show, so our audience can go on and take a look at that.
Thank you.
And I would like to thank our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, for being in the driver's seat today. And remember, Entrepreneur Radio is powered by Atlanta Business Radio. And if you would like to be a guest on our show, please send me an email, alexgshiflett@businessradiox.com. And I want to give a big thank you to our very first sponsor, Blue Phoenix Creative Media. Blue Phoenix will be creating our website for Entrepreneur Radio. So it will be much easier for you, our audience, to take a look at all of our very creative artists and view their work. Okay, my friends, I'm Alex Gossett Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest, with always wondering who will be my next guest on Entrepreneur Radio.